Welcome to the Michael Yu Podcast. We have a very special guest, Ninima Zadrafi from theglasseye.ca, who is a filmmaker and a photographer extraordinaire. Nima, thank you for coming on the pod.
Thank you. I don't know about extraordinaire, but thanks for having me. It's okay. Awesome to be here.
Well, yeah, really excited. So why don't you just introduce yourself and maybe talk about the story of you getting into film and photography.
Yeah, I didn't plan on doing this. For sure. I actually didn't even pick up a camera to do much with it until I was like 23 or 4 years old.
Okay.
So I was in high school, like my area that, you know, everyone is like into something, right? Like, is it the arts? Is it, you know, history and language? Is it science? For me, it was science, 100%.
Okay, so you're into science.
Yeah, but then my grades weren't super great, so I ended up going to Kwantlen.
Okay.
And then wanting to transfer into UBC
right.
in sciences. But what was interesting, and there's like a lot of what you call nowadays, you know, pivots.
Right.
So, I started off in the sciences, and then this one summer, I got a job as a painter for another guy that was my age for
okay.
college pro.
Okay.
I'm sure you're...
used to work at... It's another type of house painting. It's called student works, but it's
okay,
the same
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, how, yeah.
College pro. Yeah, house painting.
Yeah, and like I didn't grow up with much like business acumen passed on to me by anyone. They don't really teach it in school. So
right.
it literally was like a foreign world to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was like my vision was always, you know, you go to school, you get a job, and that's your life.
Right.
And then as silly as it sounds... The thing that blew my mind was this guy who I was working for was my age.
Yeah.
And that he could go knock on someone's door
right.
and say, hey, would you like to get your house painted? And here's why. And increase the value, blah, blah, blah. And they'd say yes. And then he'd make money.
Yeah.
Right? And then he'd have us do the work. And
right.
I'm like, this is insane. So literally after that summer of painting, it was September, it was time to go back to school, continue, you know, my science courses, and then
right.
I dropped all the classes and switched it all to business to transfer into commerce. Because
oh,
I was
wow.
like, okay. this business thing is very intriguing.
Right.
So, I switched everything, and then I ended up transferring into commerce at UBC.
Okay. So you're at the Souder, right?
Yeah, I was at Souder. And actually, it's funny, I know you recently did an episode with Jeff Pope.
Yeah,
I went to school
right.
with him. Yeah,
oh, you did?
Yeah,
okay.
Because I saw the name on the podcast.
Oh,
I was
okay.
listening to a few of the episodes.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a minute, it's Jeff.
Cool.
So anyway, yeah, I went there. I got a finance degree. And
oh, wow,
then,
okay.
And then, you know, the thing to do with a finance degree is go into investment banking.
Yeah.
There's very, like, not many opportunities. And
right.
I really, the only reason I would have wanted to do it was because of money.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's why maybe the passion wasn't there to like be chasing it. And then, you know, like everyone would be, you know, reading the Financial Post or whatever. All the students would have one of those in their bags because like showing that you're so. And I would
right.
have one too, but I really wasn't into it.
Right?
Like,
right.
I was like, I guess I should read this because
yeah.
it's what, you know, we should be doing.
Pretending.
Yeah. And then so I graduated and then ended up getting a job in the insurance industry.
Right.
And it was like an underwriting program where you learned underwriting. It was a desk job. And, was just not happy in that environment of just like being at a desk. And it just so happened that my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, just randomly, I don't even know what the circumstances were, she bought this little point and shoot.
Right.
And like I had no other camera at the time. And then I remember one day, like I was home, she was at work, and I had the day off for whatever reason.
Right.
So I just took her camera and it was just like snapping stuff around the city.
Yeah.
And then it like, whatever it was, it planted a bug. And then from then on, I, you know, I go down these rabbit holes. So I was like looking at gear online. I wanted to get a DSLR. And then so, you know, went down that rabbit. I mean, part of that is probably just wanted cool gear. And, you know, you just get into it and then you want a new lens. And I started just like snapping pictures here and there and started uploading them online. Onto just Flickr, so it was just like an online gallery.
Right.
And then another thing that like a blew my mind kind of moment was that there's another friend of mine who I didn't know had gotten into photography. He was doing it professionally.
Right.
And he had a blog, and so when he would post photos, he would post a series of them.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is not earth-shattering stuff. It's
right.
really basic stuff, but basically,
okay.
like, let's say he was into food, right? So
yeah.
like he would show the steps of making like this potato thing. So like
right.
the first step would be like the potatoes laying there and the next
yeah.
one they're cut, next you know, so
right.
and so
like
forth. And then the
book?
Final
yeah.
product is beautiful. So
yep.
and I'm like, oh, that tells a story. It's kinda cool. It's like
mm-hmm.
like a visual essay.
Right.
So then I would do that with mine. I'm like, okay, I'll start a blog, right?
Yeah.
And so then I did that at the same time. At that time, by then, I had left my job and I was a mortgage broker.
Okay.
It was like a 2008, early right. 2008. So it was like, market was not so good, right?
Right.
And then, so I was doing those two things at the same time. And then I ended up, you know, long story short, meeting certain people. Like I got invited to this one event. I ended up taking my camera and taking pictures.
Right.
I got people's cards and said, hey, by the way, great to meet you. And FYI, here are the photos from that event.
Yeah.
And one of them happened to be someone who worked at Daily Hive. Or at the time, it was Man City Buzz.
Right.
And so then they said, hey, would you like, I mean, we can't pay at the moment, but if you want to come shoot these events for us, we are happy to promote your website.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. So I went and I sure. shot it. And then because those images got so many eyeballs on them because of the website,
right.
and people started to be like, hey, can you do photos of this? I'm like, someone's going to pay me?
Yeah.
And then that kind of continued. Snowballed. And so that was sort of the unexpected. It's exactly like the, you know, the Steve Jobs commencement speech, which
right.
is like, you can make the connections looking back, but looking forward, there's no way I would have been able to predict any of those
yeah.
weird nuanced things that happened along
right.
the way, right? So that's the long and short of it. And then that just kind of gradually kept going, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and it went from photo to video, actually.
Yeah. So yeah, you were talking about that before we got started. So now you're primarily in film and in video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how's that transition been from stills to...
I think it's something I probably always wanted to do, because another thing is, you know, you know, they always say, like, you know, follow your passion or whatever, which
right.
I don't really subscribe to necessarily.
It's okay, like, why?
Well, I think it's too gray of a ask for someone to say follow your passion. Like,
right.
what does that even mean, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, today I might be into one thing and tomorrow I might see a movie and be totally into something else.
Mm-hmm.
So for me to, like, try to pinpoint that passion down, it would take me years just to figure out what is my passion,
right?
Because if you go down this rabbit hole of your own brain and you don't even know, at the end it's like, what is the meaning of anything?
Yeah.
So
for sure.
So to me, it's like, just do something,
yeah,
and then see if it's working. If it's not, then try something else, right?
I kind of am in the same, like, mindset as you and the same track as you. You know, a lot of people talk about follow your passion, like, live your dream or whatever it is. But I find, like, I've kind of evolved that a little bit to, because I used to think that, to, like, what can you do that has the most positive impact? Like, what can you do that actually has the most impact, that you're the best at? Like, that, not the best in the world, but that you can contribute the most with, because everything else is going to work out around that talent. So, like, whatever that is, you know, whether that's, you know, photography, film, creativity, whatever it is, like, try to base it around that, like, you know, that central competency, and then kind of go from there. So, like, that's really cool that you've, you know, you identified, like, something that you were, so would you say you're pretty naturally, where you're naturally, like, had an aesthetic eye for things, or?
I think, yeah, well, I don't know if natural or not, but I think that the thing that's, it's like, this could be a whole, like, many hour discussion, and I'm sure books have been written about it, is like, is just taste, right? And I think, like, I had a certain taste for what I wanted to create. And it's funny, a lot of times what I want to create and what I actually end up creating aren't even the same.
Right.
But I'm still like, okay, the thing I came up with, I'm not too displeased with it, right? But I think, like, there's two things. There's the technical execution
right.
of most things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, like, taste. And you can't really exactly define what taste is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things, you know, it's like, are you just born with taste? Is it because of what you were exposed to through your childhood and
mm-hmm.
the things like the movies and the photos, or what your parents exposed you to as a kid that crafted it? Because, you know, you, and I don't know if I have good taste. To me, obviously, I have good taste,
right?
Right? And to someone who's like, hey, I like your taste, I'd like to hire you to do that thing for me.
Yeah.
But I think that's the big difference. I think, like, there's maybe certain people where they may be far technically superior to me and
mm-hmm.
whatever it is that they're doing, but what I would say relative to my taste is that I would say the taste just isn't jiving. So the thing that you're striving for is not ever going to be the same thing. So you can execute the hell out of it,
right?
But if what you're aiming for isn't the right thing, in my opinion,
yeah,
then it's just never going to jive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as far as natural, it's funny because, like, I, you know, you look back and then I remember, like, since I was a little kid, like, you know, 6-7 years old,
right,
I was the kind of kid who would, like, get all the kids together to do a play. Like, I would want to direct all the kids to do a play
right.
in front of the parents. And then I remember, even in high school, you know, in French class, you have these French projects.
Yeah.
and I would always find an excuse to make it a video project.
Oh, okay.
And it's funny because and then I'd have like I'd borrow a second VCR from a friend, and then I'd be like, you know, doing the editing on the VCR.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, so I was doing that, just like these ridiculously stupid, but I would put so many hours into it, and it was totally not at all proportional to what the project was worth, right?
Yeah.
But it, I, you know, you look back and you're like, oh, clearly this bug has been there all along. It's just that now it's kind of, I've let it out.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to actually do something and actually, like, monetize it and provide for my family, right? So, so I guess that it's always been in there, but now it has to be a bit more structured, I guess, right?
Do you think, were your parents in the creative field, or were they in, like...
Well, I...
Or your...
My dad... So my parents got divorced when I was really, really young. Mm. So I basically raised by my mom. My dad was an engineer, and my mom definitely was more like the artistic, emotional, you know, that kind of person. I think I was exposed to a lot of art, I guess, in terms of like... She'd be very selective with the kind of like shows that she would let me watch.
Okay.
And like she'd take me little plays, and you know, music was a big thing, a lot of classical music at home. And I was like super into that stuff. And it's funny, now we do that with our son, and so he's 2 and 9 months, and he seems to have a weird acumen for music too.
Right.
So maybe that had something to do with it.
Did you play any instruments growing up?
I played in like a high school band. I played like trumpet. And, but then after high school, I just didn't touch it.
Yeah.
Which I wish I had. Like that's my wife. She's her parents are from Hong Kong. She's born here. Now she had that sort of very traditional like
piano
at 3 years old.
Yeah, right.
And she's amazing at it.
Yeah.
But it's weird. It's like with her, she's. The way she learned it was not like a fun way.
Mm-hmm.
Like music wasn't enjoyable. It was a task.
Right.
So as a result, she never really plays.
Yeah.
Whereas I know nothing about the piano, but I spend way more time on our piano at home,
right.
just doodling with stuff and, you know, dancing around with her son.
Yeah.
Than she does, because I guess maybe the joy wasn't associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like trying to find the right balance between the two things, right? So, because I didn't stick with it. So the discipline wasn't there. With her, the discipline was there, but then maybe the joy was lacking a little bit, right?
So, you know, that's a pretty, like, it's a pretty, like, full circle, you know, growing up in an environment where the arts were encouraged, you know, classical music playing all the time, going to plays, stuff like that, and then entering into, like, the sciences at school, and then going into business, and then in the creative pursuit. And I'm always really, like, you know, when you, and you talked a little bit about taste, and I think a part of that is like being very confident in like what you like and what your aesthetic is. So have you always had that confidence in like what, you know, in being outspoken about those things?
It's interesting. I think there's been maybe a confidence in what I think I like, but not necessarily in what I produce.
Okay.
That's like a weird thing. Like there's you know, and I'm sure like a client of mine isn't going to be thrilled to hear that, but at the same time, it's weird. Like I never, you know, you work, I think it's just because of the time you put into something and because you care, all you see after it's done is everything that's wrong with it.
Right.
It's always the case.
So you're pretty critical.
So, yeah, and I think it's just, I don't know, I think that's probably natural with this, you know, because with something where it is like maybe a creative piece of work, there isn't ever a, yes, it's good, and it's all opinion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't have a concrete yes or no. I mean, you know, even if you make an ad, I guess if people love the ad and everyone's just like all over the world sharing it, then you're like, oh, I guess maybe I did something right and it resonated. But at the same time, I think you notice that. But at the same, but I think going back to like observing, I think if I hear something that I like, then I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of the things it's funny. It all comes back to like parenting now, right? Because you look back on your own childhood. But for me, it's like, you know, when you're young, and I did this too, you fall into these camps that then you limit yourself, right? Like, oh, you know, I play basketball, so I gotta listen to hip-hop, and so, like, screw the drama guys. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, that was... but then you, like, limit yourself from all these other things.
Right.
Whereas, secretly, I would always still listen to some, like, cheesy pop hit or whatever.
Right.
Whereas, like, with my friends, it's like, no, you don't listen to that stuff.
Yeah.
That's, you know, but... I always knew that I liked them, so I would you know, still secretly listen to certain, like, you know, one-hit wonders or whatever back in the day. And to this day, like, I'll listen to anything, whether it's, like, a Spanish song, whether it's, like, whatever, like, even country, anything. Like, if I like it, I'll listen to it. And I think that's, especially with age, like, you just accept that. That yeah. Like, this is what I like, and it's, right. it's okay, right? Like,
that is very true, you know, and I think as you mature, you know, that, like, that craving to, like, externally get acceptance is, like, it changes, obviously,
oh, yeah.
as you get more mature and, like, I maybe had that a little bit less than others because I always listen to, like, weird music and stuff. Yeah. Like that. So what kind of music or film or, like, or do you have a director or something that really inspired you, that you really love their aesthetic, that has kind of...
I think the first... So here's another, like, pivotal moment. You know,
sure.
I don't know if you do this. Like, I want to ask you this question.
Okay.
Afterwards. If, like, if you look back on certain things that triggered, let's say, like... business for you,
oh, of course,
or like
yeah.
real estate, or just something that's, you're like, wait a minute, like, holy crap. And it might
yeah,
be something
epiphany moment
to somebody else.
Yeah.
But for me, I remember, like, movies, I just kind of watched whatever when I was like a teenager, like, oh, Ace Ventura and this and that, or whatever.
Yeah.
And there was this
already
one,
then. Right. Already then.
Yeah, exactly. But then I remember there was a friend of ours, and he was like a movie nerd, right? And the rest of us weren't.
Okay.
But then he'd, like, kind of force us to watch these movies, like Stanley Kubrick movies,
right.
and like
Clockwork Orange
or whatever.
Yep.
You like. And so I remember, I think we were in the ninth grade, so I guess we were like 14, I guess. And then I remember we went over to his house, and he's like, oh, I got this movie. I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. And so we went over there, and it was Goodfellas.
Okay.
And
yeah.
And then when I watched that, it just, like, blew my mind.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, movies can make you feel like this,
yeah.
right? And so then, from then, like, we watched, like, you know, Taxi Driver,
yep.
and, like I said, the Clockwork Orange,
right.
and I think Casino I watched later, but, like, that just completely changed my opinion of what a movie, because before it was, like, just stupid entertainment,
right?
Right? Like, it was, like, Disney movies when you're younger, and
yep.
just, like, dumb comedies with Jim Carrey or whatever,
yeah.
but then that completely changed it,
right?
And I think that, it's, you know, I don't know about you, but sometimes you see something that's so cool, and you're like, I want to do that.
Right.
You know, I want to make someone feel the way I feel from watching this,
yeah.
right? And I think maybe that was the first time I appreciated that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say Scorsese movies, and
right.
it's so, like, it's so cliche, right? Like, young teenage boy loves
yeah.
Goodfellas, but
right.
really that was what triggered it for
yeah.
me. Like, I love that movie. I've watched it who knows how many times. And then, yeah, that's kind of
well,
started.
You know, like, it's interesting, because when I look at your photos and your videos and things, there's a certain pacing, there's a certain, like, play with light that you have from your aesthetics, and I could see, like, that you've gleaned some information, like, some of the stylized ways in which they portray those films, like, because everything has effect, you know, like, I'm reading a book on, Leonardo da Vinci right now, like the Walter Isaacson biography,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, you know, you pick up things, and then that changes your aesthetic, right? Where you're from, like what you eat, what you your parents, everything that kind of build your mosaic of what your aesthetic eye is going to be. So, you know, Scorsese films, those types of like, yeah, I really like the pacing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really enjoy the pacing of telling the story.
Yeah,
and like the detail of how he. Doesn't like everything's well thought out, like, you know, what type of drinks the characters are drinking, what kind of, like, you know, what's in the background, and it was very, like, I love that movie. I love Goodfellas. I love, like, the Coen brothers and stuff like that too. The Big Lebowski is, like, one of my favorite movies.
Haven't
yeah.
seen, it's funny,
you
like,
haven't seen The Big Lebowski
about, yeah, and everyone's like, if you haven't seen it, you cannot be into movies. I haven't seen it, but
there's so many, like, you know, great, well, there's, like, a lot of different art house films. There was one recently, I think Shape of Water. It was, I think it was a Guillermo del Toro
movie.
Yeah,
I've heard of that. I haven't seen that.
Oh my gosh, it's just like, actually, when I was looking at your photography, so Nima, his website is theglasseye.ca, and he has a lot of different stills, portraits, videos, and especially a lot of film, especially getting into this film. And we contracted Nima to produce our last film piece that we. About human connection. We'll kind of dig into that a little bit more, and how pleased we were with that kind of, you know, the pacing, the light, and the aesthetic of it. So, yeah, but yeah, it's just a very, I always like to see where artists get inspired. So I have, it's weird because I'm a business guy, but I love the arts. I like, the arts are something that I enjoy in my all my spare time, but then in my professional time, it's doing deals.
Sure they bleed into each other, right?
You know,
they do. Like, your personality must be shaped by those things.
They do. And, you know, they do. Like, some of the things I love doing when I'm not a big traveler, but when I do travel, like, we always go to the local art gallery. We go to, like, old churches, and we, like, you know, I love stained glass. I think that's a really cool medium. And there's one of the agents from the office, and who we did a pod, does, like, glass blowing and stuff like that. And there's just so many different types of art. My girlfriend she wants to really get into ceramics as well. So it's like a really cool
type. My wife just got into that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's doing a lot of pottery these days.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
She's loving it. It's like very meditative, it seems like.
Right.
And it helps her slow down her thoughts too, because it's kind of like playing pool, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it doesn't sound analogous at all. But I don't know if you've ever played pool. It's kind of like if you're getting angry that you're losing, and you're actually angry, and your heart rates up, you start playing worse. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to actually be calm. You can't pretend to be calm. You have to slow things down and just, like, go each one shot at a time. I think with pottery, it's like, if you rush things, you're gonna, like, just, your finger moves the wrong way, and the whole thing's, you're like, oh, and then that's, like, how many hours of work did you just destroy, right? So it's about, like, kind of being very present. So she's loved it, so I think she would recommend to your girlfriend to do that.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, we took this, like, very basic pottery, like, night or whatever, and it was just so much fun, like, dinging your hands in the clay and stuff like that, and producing something. It was pretty cool. But, you mentioned, so talk a little bit about your transition. So you're doing a lot of stills, and then now you're really into film. So, like, what is the majority of your work? Is it mostly commercial work, or is there any kind of, what's the...
Yeah, so it's Yeah, so I started with stills, and I think one of the things that I did that was not so great for the business side of things, for what I was doing and creatively, was that early on, you know, hobby that turned into some side projects and shooting some, you know, events, basically.
Right.
Like, non-wedding, but, like, kind of interesting events in Vancouver for Van City Buzz. It was cool, but then I realized that I started to lose the intentionality, if that's a word, of what I was doing. It was just like, you know, I did a thing, and then people saw that thing, and they asked for more of that thing, so I did more of that thing, so then more people saw more of that, and it just, like, kind of, the next thing you know, I was like an event guy, and, you know, I started to get to the point where I wasn't really enjoying it, and I was like, why am I not enjoying my work? And then I was like, wait a minute, like, why am I doing events all the time? Like, I don't even know why I'm doing events. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm just saying yes to everything that comes. Like, you know, it's just like, you know, it's one of those moments you take a step back, like, why am I even doing this right now?
Right.
So I did take a step back, and I'd always wanted to get into video. And then so I just did. I think one of the things that I did was the glasseye.tv is another website. Mm-hmm. And it's like this little series that I started, and it was just purely because of that frustration, was to say, okay, I'm going to do something that's for me, that's not for client. It's going to be very quick, like, run and gun, something that I can just completely do without needing to hire an assistant or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to make these short videos and throw them on YouTube, and I'm going to put my face on camera, and I'm going to start doing Instagram stories. And it was all super uncomfortable. But I said, because I never put my face on camera before, and then I decided to do that. And the way I was going to do it was not just to do, like, vlogs of me walking around the city getting coffee, but I thought, okay, well, let me find people who are interesting to me and then profile them. A short little profile, right? Like a little micro documentary, you want to call it that.
Sure.
And one thing I really wanted there to be in those was not just, like, about them, but I wanted it to be interactive, so then I would put myself in them so that we would talk together throughout the episodes. And so I did that. There have been 3 episodes. There are 3 more that are filmed and completed that I'm going to start putting out soon. So that was one of the things that, like, I had done some video work before that, but that seemed to be the catalyst. Like, even the Instagram stories, it was to do something where it wasn't encumbered by someone else's expectations. It was just, like, what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And even though it wasn't, like, a super polished product, because it was just quick and dirty, but it was that whole philosophy, just do it as opposed to thinking about it.
Right.
And although I've kind of fallen off the bandwagon because I did those and I got quite busy with work.
Yeah.
People saw them. And I neglected that.
And
so now it's kind of getting back into that. So I've filmed a few more episodes.
Right.
And the beauty of that is I'm meeting like really interesting people through it, yeah. Right? And so, yeah, I think that that's kind of been the transition into video. I think I always wanted to do it,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't realize that I'd pinch and hold myself into a certain kind of work that it was not conscious. It was right. just like I had let whoever was calling me dictate where my career was sure. going. Because, you know, like, then the work you're sharing is all event stuff. So obviously, what do people think you right. do? It's event stuff.
Right? Yeah,
so,
for sure.
And I realized, well, wait a minute, I need to take control of this. It's kind of ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's kind of the pivot into more video. And then as I've done more video, it's just been video. And
right.
and also another thing, too, is just the willingness to say no. Like, where other stuff comes up, and let's say they're like, here, you free this day for this event. Even if I am, I'd say, but you know what? That's taking time away from editing a video that I could do.
Right.
Or shooting a video that I could do, or planning for my next video project.
Mm-hmm.
So even though there's nothing revenue-based booked on that day, all the other stuff is very indirectly revenue-based, right?
Yeah.
And even, like, forget the revenue. Like, as long as you're surviving, like, everything doesn't have to be like, oh, you have a day free, go shoot, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not about that, but it's a bit more long-term thinking.
Right.
And I think that happened after we had our son, because I realized like the amount of available time went from this to like this.
Right.
And so you're like, okay, what do I do with this tiny little amount of time
yeah.
that I have to myself? You got to be really efficient.
Right.
And so then I was like, well, you need to be intentional. You can't
right.
just kind of go willy-nilly and like, oh, someone called for this. Okay, I guess I'll do that.
Sure.
Right? So
yeah, it builds that efficiency, obviously. Well, I don't have kids, but that's what I've heard from my sister and a lot of other of my friends that have had children, is just like you find that you're being able to be super efficient in the times that you do have,
mm-hmm.
and you can produce some great work. So that's what do you think that it's going for you, Nima? Like, you know, obviously, you know, I think a lot of people, especially when they're starting their own business, when they're doing their own venture, they kind of take whatever comes, and I think you kind of have gone past that, and then to just producing the best work you can produce,
mm-hmm.
And letting that kind of speak for itself. So where do you think it's kind of headed for the Glass Eye and for yourself, Nima?
I think a thing that I've been thinking a lot about lately is obviously you have certain general goals, but for me, I want to focus more on process, because that's also where I find it like mixes me up, and I think it's unique to people, right? Like
right.
Your brain might work differently. For you, it might be like, I need that target so that I can drive towards it, right? For me, I think if I think of this target, then it gets too overwhelming, and if the path isn't clear enough, then it's just like this big gray matter of like, what the hell am I doing day to day, right? Like, wake
right.
up in the morning, I want to create this media thing, and I'm like, okay, I wake up, all right, you know?
Yeah.
So instead, for me, I found that when things are going best, when I'm in the best mood, and even financially things are great,
mm-hmm.
is because I'm sticking to a good, strong process.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like figuring out what is that process, and then trying to keep that consistent. So like I said, in the last year or so, I've fallen off the bandwagon of the process. Like, business has been good, but the process has suffered big time.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, my wife is quitting her job to help me
oh, wow.
with the operational okay. side of things, so that it does open me up to do more of the proper process. And for me,
right.
that process is to focus on the creative projects, to focus on the stuff that is, like, going back to taste, is my taste. Like, here's what I would do on my own.
Right.
And then put it out there, connect with people, and in a weird way, just trust that the rest works itself out.
Right.
Because it has. Literally every time in the past is like, when I am doing that, and you know, you show your, sorry, you show your work.
Right.
If it resonates, it'll resonate. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not to say like you create something, you put it out there, and you expect people to come and admire you, right?
Right.
Not at all. I think you still need to put in a lot of effort to go out there, meet people, talk to people, put it out there. Like, you have to insert yourself into a scene. But I think you have to insert yourself into a scene with intention of like, well, how are you presenting yourself in that scene?
Mm-hmm.
And that is the stuff that I create. So that's where I'm trying to optimize, instead
right.
of saying in 5 years I want to have a media company where we have 5 shows and whatever, like,
yeah,
that's, I mean, sure, that'd be great, but it doesn't matter if the process along the way isn't figured out.
Yeah. Have you ever created something that you thought was like a masterpiece or worth it, work of art, and it just like landed flat?
I don't really highly could think of any of my, like, I never really, looking back on them,
okay,
I don't like, I see the flaw in everything.
Okay.
<Yeah.
laughs> So
it's like, right. it's like always like, And it's probably, like, to a certain degree, it's probably not a healthy way of looking at it, because then you just always look at your work and you're... Unless it's really old stuff, then I might be like, well, that was actually not bad.
Right.
Like, you're like, man, that was a pretty good photo back then. But I think, I think a healthy dose of self-doubt is good. Because, like, that... I mean, without there being something wrong, then you're not trying to improve on the thing that's in, like, needs fixing.
Yeah.
So, but I think, like, you can definitely go overboard and just be, you know, just beating yourself up. And I try not to do that. So it's kind of like you work on the thing, you have to stop at a certain point and say, okay, this is ready here.
Yeah.
And then you have to then say, in the next one, I'm going to do better. And yeah. So I would say there hasn't been anything that I've looked at it.
Yeah.
That is my masterpiece. There's been nothing.
That's to come, maybe.
Hopefully.
No, for sure. It's going to come. It's going to come.
Or maybe it's just I'll always feel this way, but at the very end, I'll look back and be like, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
Which is kind of depressing to think that I'll be miserable this whole time. But no, I like when a project is first finished, I'm always happy with it.
Yeah.
And then that feeling fades quickly because then you start to dissect everything. Right. So,
So, maybe we can talk us through that process that you have. Like, so let's say, you know, it's a someone who wants a contract NEMA, the Glass Eye, to do their next film project, whether that's a like a story that they want to tell or whether that's like something they want to promote. So what's that process look like?
Well, I think is like you. So that's where like the business side of things is fun too, right? Where you say, okay, well, what's your actual goal?
Right,
like we can make some fun video, but like, what's the point of the video? Like, what are you trying to like just increase sales? Are you trying to get more people's eyeballs on this? What are you trying to, or what's the message you want to tell?
Right,
And then you just kind of work backwards from there. One thing recently that I mean, and a lot of people have connected with this too, is like people want genuine, and I know it sounds like a cliche these days, right? Like as everyone's saying, oh, you need to be genuine, you need to be genuine. Social media is transparency, blah blah blah. But I think it's true, right? Like this, like. Traditional ads don't really work.
No.
And I think, especially for a company that's trying to sell something, like something like this is awesome that you're doing, right? Because you're talking about yourself. Like, I listened to the one about, you read the recent one about leadership, right?
Right.
And you said, I don't think of myself as a natural leader and I got to work at it. And this is how I... So that's refreshing because I think if brands are willing to take that one step of vulnerability... that in the very short term and traditionally is like, what are you talking about? No, we got to be perfect and shiny and glistening. But nowadays, that's like the people's BS meter is way too good.
Yeah.
So I think it's like that very immediate, like uncomfortable feeling of being a little vulnerable can actually pay off. So then I would say if there's a way to show that with your brand, whatever it happens to be, then that's maybe the way. And I think like, I remember when we chatted way back, and I don't know if I want to include this, but like, to say document an agent getting their like first deal or whatever, but then all the sides of that,
right.
Not just like the hey, smiling and shaking hands and driving a nice car and like that. Who cares about that,
right?
But if you actually see the real conversations behind that, I think that is something that people would actually want to listen to.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like if you could do that, then to me that would be an awesome starting point. And then you craft the narrative and just say, then you have logistics, right? You have like limitations, you work within those. Like, okay, well, what's the budget? How many days do we have?
If
you have this many days, and what kind of footage do we need to get to make this whole? It's like, well, we need some talking head stuff. We need some kind of like action stuff.
Right.
We need conversations between people.
Yeah.
We need multiple locations just to keep things interesting. And then we want to have a general idea of the narrative throughout.
Right.
And then... For me, I prefer an environment where it is a bit more nimble, where we're moving somewhat quickly,
right?
Because I find that people are a little more natural. People are not bogged down with like, oh, take 30.
Right, you know what I mean?
It's like, to me, that's not super fun.
Yeah.
I don't think it would be fun. I've never done that, kind of like just shooting like a feature film. So trying to capture things naturally, but then make it look cinematic is... I think the approach that I have, that's kind of my, what do you call it, niche or whatever.
Right.
And then, I think it comes from, okay, well, what's the point of what you're trying to do? And then if you can show a little vulnerability, if you can kind of lift the curtains a little bit behind what it is that you do, and hopefully show a human story.
Right.
And then work with, like, the actual, you know, logistics. Say, okay, what are the limitations? How many days? And what kind of footage do we want to get, right? Yeah. Because if you have all just someone talking on screen, that's going to be very boring.
Right.
If it's all just action, it's going to be like very ADD and just like, okay, what the hell did I just watch? What's the message, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you want to have a little, like, dynamics in the whole thing.
Right.
Ideally, like, one or two characters, right? Mm-hmm. And who are these people? What is it? What's the point of these people
right.
in this video? And then craft that, and then yeah, work backwards, and then you know, you schedule your days and do it, and then
mm-hmm.
and then like music selection and all that stuff comes after the fact, or
right.
sometimes before, but a lot of times after. And then that's then it's me in my little dungeon putting all this stuff together, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So from the so if we were to like let's say 1 to 10, so you know, I don't know how many hours. So how many hours is it shoot like so let's say. Like the a whole scope of project is 0 to 10, and then how much of it is shooting, how much of it is preparation, and how much of it is editing?
That's like the $1 million question, right?
Yeah.
To even know how to quote for these projects,
because yeah.
that's the tough part. I think each shoot's different, right? Like some shoots, like let's say there's an apparel thing that we're talking about right now, and it's going to be like a lot of macro shots of the fabric and whatnot.
Right.
So something like that is mostly preparation,
right?
And it's just kind of thinking about, well, how am I gonna, where am I gonna put the light? I'm gonna do a little few test shots at home with the fabric,
mm-hmm.
like play around with it, see what it looks like. So that stuff is a lot more prep.
Yeah.
And then on the day of, you just want to make sure that you've planned enough and you have the right gear and everything, so that when you get there, you can be efficient. So you can
mm-hmm.
set everything up and go boom, 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 boom.
Right.
And so like the shooting part is, I mean, just the day, you
mm-hmm.
know, and then the post-processing for something like that, again, is it's not too crazy. Where the post-processing gets a lot more involved is like when there's a lot of dialogue. When there's
mm-hmm.
a lot of speaking, then you got to go through it all, right? Then you got to find all the sound bites. So if, you know, if you're sitting there and you've got like 2 hours of dialogue of people, like interview footage or something, then okay, so you recorded it for 2 hours,
mm-hmm.
then now you got to go sit in a room and listen to it. But while you're listening to it, you're cutting pieces like, oh, this could work, this could work, this could work. Let's take all these little splices out of it. So then when you're going through that, then that's not just 2 hours, because it's like you're playing and then rewinding and playing. So that could be like another 4 hours, right, of just
mm-hmm.
like taking those pieces. So now you've compiled all those bits of interview, like splices, and then you take those with all your other footage
right.
and then start working on that. So that could be, depending on the final product, that could be another like day. So it really depends on the nature of the project. Like if it's humans involved, and specifically if they're speaking, then I'd say the post-processing is a much larger percentage.
Right.
If it's more object-based and like beauty stuff of like a certain food, then it's all about preparation.
Right.
Because you want to make sure, like, if you got a plate of food, that the sauce isn't just dribbling on the side and
yeah.
you're working quick and you're not creating a hot environment where stuff is like starting to melt and wilt
right.
and stuff. So it depends on the nature of the shoot.
Yeah. So that's, so you know, I guess there's some fluidity, so it is very tough from a business perspective to do costing and stuff like
yeah.
that, you know, because it's so subjective to the project itself and the scope of it. So like, you know, that's a business challenge. And like, I think we talked a little bit about process, because I really you know, in a lot of the business books and stuff like that that you read, you know, there are times where you're going to wear that technician hat, where you're going to kind of like be in the process. And then, you know, there's times where you have to go away and kind of oversee and kind of do your visioning of where you want to take the company, and then kind of do the reverse engineer and everything like that. And so when we were doing our visioning for our company, for Oakwin, we really wanted to have marketing as a huge differentiator for us, as something that was like completely unique. And so we kind of did a deep dive of real estate marketing and how brokerages marketed, how agents marketed, like HGTV, like kind of the, it was so cotton candy, like
mm-hmm.
everything felt very kind of like
campy and stuff.
Campy
yeah.
and very like, I don't know why, I just like the word that Morgan and I always were talking about was like cotton candy. Everything's
mm-hmm.
like cotton candy. Nothing has like substance, nothing has like earthiness. And so we actually went and we would go out and meet a lot of different creative types, and we were looking for people that had no background in in real estate at all. Like, mm-hmm. we wanted the people that didn't shoot real estate. That so when we did our brand, when we did the Oakman brand, we hired Glassford and Walker. They're a fantastic brand strategy and creative company, mm-hmm. and they did our whole branding. They never touched real estate, and you know, I think when I was looking at your like your aesthetics for our, so Nima helped us produce our last video, our last short. We're promoting it right now, so it's a video on human connection. It tries to tell a little bit of a story. Mm-hmm. So, I was semi-involved in that process, but not a whole lot. You know, there's people in our team that are far more creative and better communicators than me, but and they did a fantastic job, and I was so pleased with the end result of that film. So it was about human connection, and it was about you know, we're trying to build lessons and have a bit of earthiness to the material that we're putting out as a company to kind of create a differentiator. So, like, what were some of the, like, you know, in that process that you were, you know, when we were working on that video, like, how was that? What percentage input was the team versus yourself? Was it like a team? How did it?
Well, first of all, I think, like, the original message of it was cool because it really resonated, right? Like, I think the very first conversation was myself, Amanda, and Morgan.
Right.
We sat down and chatted, and the idea was something along the lines of, vaguely, I don't remember exactly, but it was about, you know, like, in a coffee shop, you're on your phone, and you're not really noticing the world around you, and maybe if you put it down, like, things would, your life would be a little different.
Right.
And the thing is, that really connected with me, and also it was nice to... Again, like, kind of going back to the vulnerability, what's also kind of, like, you have a brand kind of standing for something, like a value, right?
Right.
And it's interesting, a thing that Mark Zuckerberg said in an interview, it was a podcast, I think it was Masters of Scale, I don't know if you mm-hmm. listened to it, and he said a value has to be something where it costs something. Like, a value can't be a thing where you, you know, like, oh, one of our values is honesty. It's like, okay, well, then... Like, well, yeah, of course you should be honest. Like, what are you giving up? Like, being a cheat? Like, of course you're going to be a cheat. We're not hiring cheats, right? Well, yeah. For them, you know, their age-old thing was, like, the move fast and break things, which was our value is to move quickly and iterate, but the cost of that is that things won't work and we're going to have a lot of bugs and we're going to have to fix them, right? And that was their ethos. And for you to stand by and say, like, you know, we want stronger human connection, but to say, hey, put down your phone when you know that everyone's got their phone in their hand, so that you risk someone being like, hey, well, screw you.
Yeah.
But to do that, I think, was like kind of a ballsy move, and it's mm-hmm. like, okay, well, that's cool. And it's something that for me is like, I've got no social media on my phone now.
Yeah.
And it's gotten to the point where I literally will, like, because I need Instagram for my work, right?
Right.
So what I'll do is I'll download it in the morning, I'll do what I'm gonna do, then I'll delete it off my phone and then download it again at the end of the day, just because I know it'll freaking suck me in, right?
Right.
So again, it resonated with me.
Yeah.
And so then we said, okay, well, what's a little narrative? And I thought, you know, another thing that we are lacking these days is literally like a human connection. It's
right.
Like actually talking to someone for an extended period of time. And so I thought, okay, you know, if you're in a coffee shop, like meeting someone, right? Like, and then what could that transpire to?
Mm-hmm.
And so there was that idea, and I think at the time I was watching Fargo. I don't know if you watched the show.
No,
Fargo.
No.
Oh, you should watch it.
Yeah, it's good.
The TV show.
Right.
Yeah, it's amazing. And they were using this split screen thing where they were showing, like, and for them it wasn't two different narratives going on at the same time. But when I saw the effect, I was like, I liked it, and it almost like worked a little bit with. I think a lot of people like can get distracted easily.
Yeah.
But if you have two things to look at, you're like, oh, there's more stimulation, right?
Yeah.
I believe Morgan shared another inspiration video where it was like two different versions of like a workspace. And one was an awesome one and one was a kind of a dreary one.
Right.
And so, like, why don't we play those things together and say, okay, well, here's this guy on his phone, and he's on his phone because that's what we all do at a coffee shop. But what if there's another version of him that wasn't? So what is their life going to look like, the two of those journeys,
diverging,
right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that butterfly effect thing, right? Like, well, a little difference now of, like, just being on your phone versus not could have a massive impact in, like, 10 years.
Right.
Because you could have met someone, and that person could have been the one, and you could have gotten married, and you have a kid. Now you've created life because you weren't on that phone, right?
Right.
Like, it's a little extreme, but I thought, like, that could be a kind of a cool story to tell because it's also totally reasonable to think that. Like, that could happen. because you could miss out on an opportunity to connect with somebody. And mm-hmm. I think it's cool to do that. And it's funny because, like, as we were doing that, like, you know, Apple's come out with their, you know, screen time thing to get people to not be on their screens as much. Right. Google came out with one. I think Facebook's working on something. There's, like, authors coming out with books on how to help you get off your phone. Because it's like a relevant thing.
Right.
So I think that's why, like, the story was cool. And, like, let's craft it out and have the little split versions of, like, where your life could go. And then we just kind of put the pieces together. And then I think it turned out fun.
Yeah, you know, the nucleus of that... that short film was that you know, there's kind of a general malaise of unhappiness that a lot of people you know, from a statistical standpoint, that, like, the rates of psychoactive drugs that people are taking, like antidepressants, uppers, downers, the rates of, like, young suicide and all these other things are just, like, kind of just getting really out of hand and out of control. And it's, for the most part, it's like a sense of isolation, but not isolation, because you have this kind of device that has increased intellectual quotients but has reduced a lot of the emotional quotients that people do require and they need. And we talk a little bit about epiphany, like Nima spoke earlier about epiphany moments. Like, he had a moment in his life where he saw someone from College Pro, like, having a door knock, where he turned that into a monetized amount where other people were doing the work, and that just clicked. But if he wasn't in a present state, willing to kind of see that and witness it, and he was just staring at his phone or looking at somewhere else, that would totally change his life. And the same thing with the point and shoot that his wife brought that day, and he had a day off, and if he was lying horizontally on the couch, like, staring up on his phone and not taking that time to, I'm going to spend that day to doing that, the whole trajectory, he might still be a mortgage broker right now. And so some of these things that, you know, are, like, kind of paramount moments, or it always happens, like, instantly. Like, change doesn't happen incrementally, it happens, like, instantly. And so looking at trajectory, looking at kind of that situation, it's funny because that story is to some extent the story of, like, myself and my girlfriend Priya getting together. Yeah, we met at a coffee shop. Really? We didn't hold that the same book or anything that. The book was a connected, mm-hmm. A connectivity piece for the whole, you know, for that for that shoot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so, like, you know, we met at, like, a coffee shop, and, like,
who initiated conversation?
I can't even remember. I think like, you know, they say communication is only, like, 10% verbal, and, you know. And I wish, like, you know, we should have video in these things, because Nima, his communication style is, you know, he's great as a conversationalist, but, you know, he's communicating very much with his body language and how he's animated and how he's present he is. And, you know, it's hard to kind of...
away from the microphone.
Yeah, I keep, like, pushing it towards
him. Yeah, he's like, dude, talking to Mike.
But that's
I'm
okay.
Watching the levels, because I'm always watching levels.
Yeah, there you go. So, but, you know, that being said, I think, you know, I think she communicated, like, I think we communicated to each other. I don't know who initiated what, but I think communication, like, I think I suggested this on my last pod, is actually, like, 92% nonverbal, and you're communicating all the time. Like, when you're walking down the hall and you have your head buried in your phone, you're communicating, leave me alone, I'm too busy to hear anything else. When you're, like, your head's up high and you're kind of, like, strutting around, you're like, I might be too good for this place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's you're always, I think human beings are always communicating, and, you know, it's just how we how we kind of position that. So yeah, you know, that's something that we wanted to do as a differentiator, because I think especially in our industry, in real estate, there's so much it's such a compelling topic, you know, shelter. You know, there's food, shelter, and oxygen, I guess, as kind of like appropriation. Yeah. Like, you know, we're talking about, like, the major pillars of society, like, and the things that are important, what keeps us moving, what has sustained us. And so, and there hasn't been as much creativity in that space as I think should be. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big thing for us. So we want to meld, creativity into our business. And there's a developer that's kind of doing it right now, West Bank. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know West Bank, yeah. And Ian Gillespie, and he's trying to create, like, put art and real estate into one mm-hmm. Craft. So it's you know, obviously no idea is unique, but I was really interested in how he paired, like, his like his last development was with the Go Ballet, mm-hmm. and you know, how there's going to be a ballet infused into, like, his project, mm-hmm. and I thought it was really you know, I hope it's for because I don't know Ian Gillespie at all, I hope it's for, like, a real genuine purpose of, like, you know, of promoting art and mm-hmm. different pieces and making people think a little bit differently. For me, everyone's a little bit different. I like nitty gritty. I like stories. Mm-hmm. I like a hero's journey. mm-hmm. You know, so everyone's a little bit different, and it's not to create eloquence so that I can make more money from it. Like, that's not really mm-hmm. like for me. I don't feel like that as a like a compelling draw, where, you know, if you're infusing art into a project so that you can sell it for a higher price, maybe a little bit different than, you know, genuinely trying to you know, use creativity in places where you're able to and have some like to relate to the public, you know, a little bit more. So that's why we thought it was really interesting. There's a few companies in, like, I think a lot of, like, kind of standard practice kind of companies, like banking and real estate, insurance. Like, I looked at some of those that have had the best, so it's really, it's strange that computers, for example, are, like, it's a really, like, tech type of thing,
but Apple changed it
to, like, completely. Being really, like, an outlet for beautiful creative works. And I'm like, oh, like, how is that even possible? Because it's supposed to be, like, the super technical mm-hmm. microchip realm, and in the early 80s they're changing it to like a creative pursuit, mm-hmm. and then and how that's shaping things. So I always found that was very interesting, and we want to kind of create that type of environment here. And that's why, you know, we contracted Nima to do our last video, and hopefully we can do a lot more you know, with you know, the you know, with being willing to take risks and stuff like that. Yeah,
and I think, you know, I think the thing that's, it's already happening, but I think it's more and more this is going to happen, is sort of that sort of branded content, or the line between a commercial pursuit and a piece of art start to get blurred, where, kind of like you're saying, like, instead of a company or a brand saying, okay, I need to make this creative so that the people who are creative buy this so I can charge a little premium, because they're going to, instead of that short-sighted vision, is to say, okay, well, we are a company that is a for-profit, and we need to make returns. Now, with those returns, I can go and buy a bunch of stuff and, you know, live in a jet or something. Yeah. or we can also use that, and when we are trying to spread our message, we try to do something creative with it mm-hmm. that's going to resonate with people. Instead of saying we want to sell, it's like something that resonates. Because if something resonates, then people naturally will come back.
Yeah.
And I mean, let's not kid ourselves, a piece of art that's not seen by anybody is kind of pointless, right? So, like, if there is a economical component to it, like, if there's, I think apparently Mind of a Chef was essentially a branded mm-hmm. content show on Netflix, right? But that's an amazing show.
Yeah.
But, I mean, David Chang, who's a genius at that kind of stuff, he's doing such an awesome job, but it's good content. Like, I don't care if it's sponsored by his brand and whatever. Right. Like, I couldn't care less because he's making awesome content. Yeah. Ugly Delicious is another great example.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that line is kind of becoming more and more blurry. And I think that as time goes on and brands get it, it's instead of being like, hey, here's, like, you know, here's just a giant ad, come buy your stuff. It's like that just is not really working anymore. You know, if you see, you know, pre-roll stuff, a lot of times you're like, eh. But if you have original content that's regular, and people start to say, okay, I get the vibe of this brand. I get their taste. I get their values, right? And I'm on board. And some people aren't going to be on board, and that's fine, right? I think that's going to hopefully be where things go. And that's what I want to be involved with brands that want to do that want to maybe say, okay, let's look a little more long-term and say, what can we create that is actually going to be interesting to people mm-hmm. that is backed by us? I think this relationship has fizzled since, like, it ended. But Vice and Fido had a thing. I don't know if you... Yeah, they had, like, a huge $100 million deal or something where Vice was doing these like weird, you know, like real crooks of society kind of stories about like someone who's selling sex toys out of their basement or something, and it was like brought to you by Fido, and it's like, well, why is Fido? But then they're just showing that, hey, we support interesting, cool content that you're going to be wanting to watch.
Right.
It doesn't have to be about a phone and how it's got 3G or 4G or 5G, right? It's about saying, what do we stand for as a brand?
Yeah.
And to me, that kind of stuff gets a lot more eyeballs as well if you're looking at it from a financial perspective, right?
Well, I think there's so much... It's just, it's an evolution of, like, I think that there was... There's somewhat of a formulaic way of promoting a company. You know, I remember growing up watching just commercials, like, and I don't know, I have a weird memory. Like, you know, I like have, you know, it's just like, you know, it's like that, like United Furniture Warehouse is like United Furniture Warehouse, bump bump. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, it's like Oakland Realty, bump bump. Yeah. Like, and so, I think when you have a fascination with a project or business or something like that, and how are you communicating? How are you relating with the, like, public relations or marketing is like, how are you relating your message to, like, to the people out there? How are you, like, how are you connecting with them? And I and then there's that space in between the business and the consumer, or the business and the public, and how are you going to, like, how are you going to package that space in between, and how are you going to make it something that you're going to be really proud of when you look back, because it's all going to be, we can talk about existentialism, but it could, you know, it's all, you want to just look back and be proud of the things that you've done. And I know that if I was like, if just for myself and Morgan and Arlene and our whole team here in Ace, like if we had like the like United Furniture Warehouse of like realty, like I wouldn't look back and be like, like I love the fact that I did United Furniture Warehouse like of realty, and it's like, okay, like we want to look back and be like, look at the space we created in between us and our customers, and what does that mean, and how did we try to change that paradigm, that formulaic response of like, okay, like the perfectly coiffed realtor walking in and doing the deal and negotiating $5 million to $6 million and thinking that was stressful, and like kind of walking out, everything's perfect, and without having any lesson behind it, without having a moral, because these messages, they should create a story. They should create a they should be like almost like a parable for something that goes that you can kind of take with you and go beyond. There was a insurance commercial that really impacted me about just like this friendly young guy. It was like from Singapore that I watched.
And then
he just kind of does. He's just like, he's almost like a everyday, like a friendly neighborhood superhero type of character. So he helps this old lady move her cart over the curb, and he like moves a water plant to like, and he just, there's just like a flourishing of everything. And I think the moral is just like to do good. And then at the end of it, it was just some insurance company or it was an airline. I can't even remember, but it was in Singapore. And I thought,
did it work?
I'm like, well, you know, but it doesn't matter if it didn't, if it worked or not. Like, and it wasn't about being viral or whatever it was. If it like, it impacted me, I was like, oh, I actually went away from that. And I was like, you know, I was almost looking to try to help someone, know, and like, because that was the reward itself. Like, there was no payoff for this guy. He just helped everyone else. There was no payoff for him. And he just did the acts of good for the sake of the acts of good. And so, you know, just kind of going down that strain, like, why are we doing this, like, message? And if we're going to invest, like, is it, what is it all about? And trying to create an emotional and a physical response to that in the real world, you know, in the space in between us and our customers, how can they take that message and take it from the space between themselves and anyone else and have that as a 1% improvement of their life, or like a 0.5% improvement of their life, or in how they think. So that's kind of like how we draw things up from a like philosophical standpoint when we're talking about marketing, or we're talking about the root causes of why we are even doing this enterprise or anything like that. So it's kind of so I was just so glad to hear and hear Nima's story, and obviously work with him in like in the best way I know how, is to like get out of the way with I think with creative types, you just in my opinion, everyone's a little bit different. Morgan and is amazing. My business partner and Amanda Ace, our brand strategist, is awesome. You know, we like to like let the reins go and then like kind of see where it heads with the creative. And you know, there's some editing and stuff like that has to be done, some feedback stuff. But for the most part, it was you know, we're really excited to present the commercial. So I think, you know, you can see our NEMA produced short on YouTube at I think it's youtube.com/Oakwin or just search in the search bar Oakwin. I hope that's the right case. But so NEMA, what exciting projects are you working on next?
I've got some other types of real estate videos that I've got on the go. I've got, like I said, an apparel thing that we're working on. And other than just commercial projects, honestly, the thing that I'm trying to focus most on is doing more of my own stuff.
Yeah.
Which is like that series picking back up. Yeah, I mean, like this commercial stuff that comes up all the time, it's completely like a paper company and then an apparel company and then a food company or whatever, right? It's all over the place. And those are great, and I enjoy those, and you learn everything, something new every single time. You meet awesome people, which has been great. We recently did it was like a kind of a rush thing, but we did a Kickstarter video for a shoe company, and they ended up getting funded really, really great.
Amazing.
Awesome. So yeah, it's just like all over the place. But yeah, like actually one thing I was gonna ask you. So you know, you talked about, you know, that space between you and the clients, and it's something, but I think specifically I've noticed with myself, I assume with you too, is like there is this kind of a compound interest in that place, which is, you know, the more consistent you are, the more regular you are, then the message is kind of like built on itself,
right?
And the viewers kind of, it's reinforced more, and then so, you know, it is kind of like compound interest in a way. And then it goes back to like the only way to keep things consistent is to have a process.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that's again for me the thing I've always struggled with. Like I'm fine with like creating a process and starting it, but then it's like then work gets crazy and then you start to neglect the process. Mm-hmm. For you to have built this
right
with your team,
right,
how have you been able to, I assume that there's certain things that you've like worked on, and clearly from listening to your podcast, you read, you're trying to improve, you know, all sorts of things. I think I remember, I don't know which episode it was, but you talked about like you even took up like a stand-up class.
Yeah.
So like you're trying different things, right?
Right?
Like so you're trying to improve. And so I'm curious, in that realm of things, mm-hmm. how do you approach it as far as processes? Because you've got an end goal in mind, let's say.
Right.
But I guess I'm less interested in the end goal, but more like getting there, mm-hmm. and being regular with things.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a couple things.
Especially when you get busy.
Yeah. One is, I think the most, you know, and I keep kind of coming back to this, like, is really knowing yourself extraordinarily well. Like, doing things like stand-up courses or anything it's a skill set, but also it's an exercise to get to know yourself better.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something that gives you a psychological, physical, or emotional reward, and trying to get to know yourself really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
And once you know your core competencies, the things that you really are excellent at, that you can try for, understand your deficiencies as well, what your blind spots are, the things that you're not, like, knowing yourself is not just your strengths, but knowing where your faults lie, and where the soft underbelly, where you know, we're not talking about in war, but this is the chink in the armor.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not just like knowing those things, but actually like writing them down. Like, this is what I'm good at, this is what I'm not so good at. And then really when you're building like, I know that to do something great, to do something big, for whoever has ever done anything big, even a genius, and I'm not a genius, is to involve other people.
Mm-hmm.
And move as a group. So I think it was a Steve Jobs thing, or I don't even remember who it's, but a small group of people that want to make a change can change the world. That's how every change in the world has ever happened. It's always a small group of people. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 people have an idea, and they have this kind of like, you know, in like the Roman times, there's like a phalanx. They're just like in this perfect formation.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're able to protect each other, where they're able to like work as a unit And it's identifying the things that you require, and then identifying the people around you that have those core competencies that really, really fill the chinks in your armor, or the soft areas of your mm-hmm. of your organization, and so that everyone can really focus on what they do best. And I've been really, really fortunate that you know, people through my faults and through my poor leadership and all the rest of it, they've stuck with me, and they've kind of rode it out. You know, obviously it's been in entrepreneurship for me, it's been a 13 or 14 year journey, and you know, my sister Arlene has been with me since like the beginning mm-hmm. of that, and you know, Morgan and I have been together for a long time, like my, you know, so we just been in this journey, and so you're looking for those complementary people, and it's, I know it's kind of cliche, but I think business is all about the individuals and the people that are there. And if you are leading an organization, it's like, I was thinking, like, what do I like the most? I just really love people. Like, I'm interested in them, I'm curious about them, and I want to see them optimize professionally and personally, just do great works. And so, right. you know, and so, but it's finding the right individuals that have those things. And it's sometimes the convenient choice, you know. For example, my sister and I, that's a convenient choice. And just so happens, I got super lucky that she has this amazing core competency that perfectly aligns with us at that time. And now that we're growing, it's, I think a lot of, when you're starting a business, you wear a few different hats. And then as the business grows from an organizational standpoint, roles kind of start splitting. Mm-hmm. So my executive assistant that I used to have, that used to do all my marketing, all my administration, everything, you know, once you get busier, that role splits. One person does administration, one person just does marketing. Mm-hmm. And so because your organization grows, and then there's workload capacities that people have, and then you're able to like split roles. Mm-hmm. So for example, I used to, when I first started the realty, I used to do lunchtime reception. Like, that was one of my roles. That was mm-hmm. one of my jobs.
Yeah.
Every day I did lunchtime reception. I knew from 12 to 1 o'clock I was going to be at reception because we're starting the company.
Yeah.
And then sooner or later, I understood my core competencies a little bit better. I'm like, okay, is it the best hour yeah. use of my time to yeah. do the lunch break for the reception? And it's like, okay, no. Okay, we'll get a conveyance. Like, and we had a receptionist that did conveyancing and accounting. So all three roles.
Yeah.
And then my sister was the managing broker that also did these other things. And I was selling properties and, you know, trying to strategize and lead the company. And it's like, so, you know, the roles got to split.
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
think as an organization grows, you just get closer and closer to your core competencies and where you're going to be the sharpest. And then involve the people. And that's always based on, for me, you know, everyone's a little bit different. I base that somewhat on the workload, but mostly I base it on gross revenues. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, from a business perspective, I'm a pretty numbers oriented guy. I'm like, okay, we hit this gross revenue target, this is when we can split this role.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to hit this target in order for us to do that. And we have to output good work to hit this target.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, chicken and egg stuff. But for me, it's always like, if we hit this target, then we can split the role and you will have someone that works with you in yeah. this particular element. So,
that makes sense. Yeah. And I guess a lot of it seems like, going back to the book that was in the video, the principle, like being very critical of yourself, like exactly owning up to what your own weaknesses are.
Yeah.
And I think that's something definitely that hopefully comes with maturity. I found for me, it definitely came later in life, right?
Yeah.
Like when you're younger, you don't think there's anything wrong with you, right? But it's all these blind spots that you're not aware of. And then at a certain point, you're like, you know what, this one type of thing, like, it just, I don't thrive in this. And I always think of it like, you know, something that would take me 10 units of energy to do, get one unit of output,
right.
someone else takes them one unit of energy.
Exactly.
Right? And so
yeah.
it's like, well, why am I doing this? It
right.
makes no sense. It's just not my natural state
yeah.
to be in. And so then that's when you're like, okay, let's rethink this a little bit,
yeah.
right?
And that's a big thing, because it is very, because, you know, we're going to want to work with people we like. And a lot of times the people we like are very much similar to us, and they're mm-hmm. going to want to do the exact same things
exactly.
that you do.
Exactly.
And it's like, okay. So, like, and I've said this in the pod before, and my staff have, like, come back to me about this, but I'm like, I wouldn't probably hang out with them. but we have very complementary skill sets,
mm-hmm.
and we form a great team.
Yeah.
You know, I joke around, like, you can't have, like, I'm a comic book guy, you can't have a bunch of Wolverines. You know, so there's the X-Men. You can't have a bunch of Wolverines. You need to have Cyclops as well, and you need to have, like, all the other characters, because if you had a bunch of Wolverines, they're going to lose every time to the problem, which is Magneto, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, you have to, like, so when you're building an organization, and it's not just a convenient choice, you know, and looking at it from you know, from a deep understanding, and you're doing a little bit of a deep analysis of the characters, because this is, you know, I think business is just a group of people, and how much effect that group can actually have, because the impact that group can have is going to be directly related to how much money actually pulls out the other way. I just think of that as, like, a from a philosophical standpoint. I'm like, if you do a bunch of positive effect, it's like throwing down a big hammer, and then a bunch of stuff's going to come out.
That's so true. I totally agree. And I think it kind of goes back to that whole compounded... I'm going to interrupt myself.
Sure.
Don't mind me as we talk.
Okay.
Just, you know, I'm just going to get, like, some B-roll, because I'll throw this on my Instagram
story. Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. So you're going to download the Instagram thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, kind of like the compound interest thing I was talking about. Like, I remember when I was a mortgage broker, I was kind of being mentored by this other mortgage broker, and she was unbelievable. She was very successful. But her thing was always like, if you just are out there doing the stuff properly and you're putting in the effort to make connections, things will come back to you. Call it voodoo, call it whatever the hell you want to make, call it. It'll happen. And now you realize, like, it's not voodoo. It's just that's you're putting information out there that people can communicate to other people, right? Like, when I'm more active online, when I'm showing my work more, when I'm connecting to people, with people, when I'm doing projects and then, like, physically meeting people, it's like, just like your name and your brand and your whatever are going out there, and then and it's now available for those people to share that information with others when the opportunity arises. So each one of those and it's enjoyable. It's not like a chore. I mean, for some people it might be a chore, but like, usually it ends up being an enjoyable process to get out there and be doing something and making a bit of an impact, right? The other question I was going to ask you, and again, I don't know if you want to use it, but is the whole thing with I assume we're kind of a similar age. I'm 35 years old.
Yeah. 36.
So we went, I think we're a pretty unique generation, because we were here pre-internet and after. Not and in our prime, like when we were teenagers, like that thing came and it was like, whoa, right?
Right.
Like, so when we were young, like when you needed information, you had to like call your friend or whatever and all that stuff, right? And that world has changed so much. There's a lot of younger people now that's all they know, right? That immediacy of information. And then going back to like the age old thing where like grouchy old people like complain about millennials, but sometimes I find there are certain patterns that you do notice in people of a certain age range. And for you to be, I work with a lot of people, but I don't have an organization this size. I'm curious if the millennial phenomena of, you know, some of those stereotypical qualities that people describe, have you seen it? And if you have, how do you approach it? That difference in generational attitude towards getting things or, you know, accomplishing things or reaching out to people and making an effort versus expecting certain things to happen, or a certain sense of comfort feeling like it's a necessity for
life. Well, you know,
first of all, do you agree?
Yeah,
all agree.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's I don't know if it's a generational thing or it is just the fact of the tools that they have. So like when I think about the, you know, this whole generation, it's they have these tools that give them instant access to certain things. So it's not a it's not specifically a like it's a generational thing, like it's like, you know, something was in the water and then they just came this way, you know. I think it's a product of the upbringing, the nurturing, and the tools that they're given. So for example, let's say a farmer was teaching his son before the tractor was invented. So a farmer was teaching his son, and then the tractor was invented to clear large scopes of fields in like in a day, where it used to take him 2 weeks. So that farmer might say to his son, you don't know what hard work is you have a tractor.
It's the age-old thing, right? The and previous generations, like, you have it easier.
Yeah, it's an advancement, you know. So I don't think it's specifically, like, I think it's just it's an environmental nurture thing, because I think all human beings, like, Morgan, and you have a child. Mm-hmm. Everyone is born as this, like, just this kind of this big lump of clay.
Yeah.
And every inference that you have is just, like, denting that clay.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's just, so I just feel like it's just but everyone, we all have the same DNA as human beings. So there's certain things that we require. We require human connection. We require food, water, shelter. We require stimulating conversation in many cases. We require community. Mm-hmm. We require how business is run with these individuals is going to be a little bit different, and how the communication is done. Yeah. with when before I used to pick up a phone and call people, now for the most part I still call my staff, but for the most part I call I'll text them or something like that. And so it's just understanding the, you know, putting yourself in their shoes, in their environment. And I feel like Nima, you and I think we were so fortunate to be in probably the greatest, like, just a great time to live. Mm-hmm. You know, on the cusp of, like, from an industrial age to a technological information age, where we're just kind of, like, we just crossed over into this.
So we saw before and after.
Yeah.
And we were old enough to know the before.
Right.
And then we weren't too old where the new was completely, like, unfathomable, and we couldn't really grasp it, right? We got it, so we got both of them.
Yeah, and clearly. It's, you know, I find it, because I feel like you have ability, you know, you're going to be biased to your own generation. I think everyone is, because it's your own experience. But you get to be able to critically think about things and absorb and process information, and kind of come up with your own resulting attitudes towards it. But I think right now the media is just so pervasive in these young people's lives, and, like, it's almost becoming a bit of a hive mind. And so, mm-hmm. which is, like, to me is really, and it's all by choice. So, you know, people are choosing to raise their kids this way. People are choosing to live this way. And it's far more pervasive, you know, like in 1984, the Big Brother kind of coming down on people in an authoritarian way. Mm-hmm. I think that is still almost happening, but we're choosing. So they found a way for us to choose that path.
That's exactly it. I gotta send you this article.
And so, I don't think it's a generational thing. I think we work with a bunch of millennial people here, and they're some of the greatest, most committed, kind, and caring individuals. Just like any generation have mm-hmm. these types of people. It's just the tools that they had, the environments that they had, but they still crave the same things: community, connection, food, water, shelter. Mm-hmm. You know, we have this thing where, in our office or their team, it's a rule that you don't eat lunch in front of a computer. Mm-hmm. Like, so you had to break bread with people, and you actually like talking to them. And so it's something that we have here for the staff at the company. And, you know, I really encourage people to do that, to put away, you know, some of their devices and stuff like that, so that they can freely think. So, you know, when an opinion is kind of thrown your way, Nima, you're able to process it and then come up with your own conclusions versus just, like, face value everything. So mm-hmm. I think that's something that kind of comes, you know, that we see now. So I think every I'm a kind of an optimist. I think every human being is a good person. They're good people, but how they're led and how they're connecting is, like, is gonna see how productive that they could potentially be. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's, like, the last pod I did was on leadership. I don't think that I think everyone has the capability to do everything. It's just the environment, the connections, and the willingness to do it. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, if you're not in an environment with a good role model or a good leader or a good something like that, you're not gonna thrive. Yeah. And you can blame it on, like, any good leader, any bad leader will blame it on his soldiers or mm-hmm. his team.
Yeah.
And every great leader will take the onus on themselves. I didn't create the right environment for them to thrive.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, it's trying to flip that paradigm, because I've heard that with a lot of business owners, and I just disagree. I think it's, you know, it's a lame excuse for leaders to be lazy and to not do the things and not evolve and grow. Mm-hmm. Because if you do evolve and grow, then people will stay loyal to you. And like, you know, a lot of the staff we have here is like 6-7 years in. You know, I hope they're happy at their job. I don't know. I hope they haven't there's only been one mutiny.
Yeah, there's been one already.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think that a lot of, you know, so it just depends on I think on the environment, the community.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously running your own ship, being the captain of the ship, like, making sure that those bonds are there, mm-hmm. you know, and then they're going to produce great stuff.
Yeah.
This has been an amazing pod, and I'm so happy, but it's been a long pod. Yeah, so we got to wrap it up. So what is the best way that people can get a hold of you, Nima?
Right now on Instagram, it's theglasseye.tv.
Theglasseye.tv.
So it doesn't point to my commercial work, but it goes to sort of that web series.
Sure.
So you see a bit of my face in there too on those videos, and there'll be more episodes to come out very soon. We've got, right now we have some guys who restore old Porsches featured. We've got a chef. We've got a character designer, like animator, kind of cartoon guy. We've
right.
got a triathlete, a local triathlete. She's unbelievable coming mm-hmm. up. A mural artist, and Mark Brand from Save On Meats, the guy who owns several businesses.
Right.
Very inspirational dude. And there'll be many more to come. So that's the place I'd say right now is the website is theglasseye.tv. And the Instagram handle is theglasseye.tv.
Excellent. Well, Nima, thank you so much for being on the pod. And if you've enjoyed listening to this, please do me a favor. And you can like, rate, and subscribe it. Hopefully 5 out of 5. And Nima, thank you so much for being on the pod today.
Thank you. It was awesome.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was great. Thanks, Nima.